seagull. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 473, to be broadcast on Wednesday, February 25th on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live right now, you can comment down here below. Or if you're listening on an audio file, just send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Yes, and big shout out to Jason at WHUS for getting us all up to date. Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it. Ron's rant of the week. In his latest provocation towards Canada, President Trump is threatening to block the opening of a new connection between Detroit and Windsor, and in the process, shut down a bike path that would provide a rare non-automotive connection between the U.S. and our neighbors from the north. Interesting, huh? Well, if it affects bicycles, you're going to hear about it here. And tariffs are illegal? Or are they legal? What's going on with the tariffs? We got some tariff news coming up here. Been talking about it for a while. We've been watching our prices all go up. And guess what? Things are going to change. We think. Then, as I say, we think. But anyway, that's my rant of the week. I'm not going to go any further than that. on a positive side, congestion pricing's unexpected winners. You know, we've been talking about congestion pricing in New York City and how wonderful it is because all of a sudden there's a lot less traffic in downtown and it's a lot easier to ride your bike down there. So it just becomes a more pedestrian and bicycle friendly atmosphere. Well, guess who else makes out on this deal? Suburban drivers. Yeah, New York City's controversial toll program hasn't just sped up trips in Manhattan. A new paper finds it's easing traffic in outer boroughs and neighboring counties. Who would have guessed? We could have told them this. Anyway, and also on a positive side, there's a new book out, Cars Ruin Everything. And that's why we need life after cars. From the same people that put together the podcast War on Cars, they have a new book out. And it's called Life After Cars. So anyway, we'll maybe talk a little bit about that too if we have some time. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. The Cervical Fusion Blues. Yes, the Cervical Fusion Blues. That's my blues right here. My little small titanium bridge in the back of my neck. And I told you I'd get you a continued update. Well, I got a continued update. Got something going on here. I was riding in one of my weekend hour and a half long spin classes. And I got to talking with my PT guy and Mr. Dave Hoyle, and so a little shout out to Dave here. And after we got done with class, he said, come over here, bring that bike over here, let's take a look at you. And he gave me a couple of tips and a few changes to make while sitting on the bike, and then told me to keep working on my exercises, and it's making a difference. I can see forward a little bit better than I could before I did this. Downside, last week was my first week of assuming this new position, and by assuming this new position, of course, I've discovered all sorts of new muscles in my back, which is good and bad. Good because, obviously, I wasn't using them properly, and so therefore, we're heading in the right direction. Bad because it hurts. But that's okay. We'll get better, and I'll get stronger, and I'm going to keep working on this, and Hopefully I'll be able to get myself back in a more, I don't know, fast forward position when riding my bike. That's what I'm kind of looking for. So we'll see what happens there. I'm also going to go have a chit chat with a fit person on Friday, as long as the weather holds out. That's another story, and I'll fill you in on that later on also. Okay. And also on the Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips, I found an article on good low-cost radars. You know, I talk about radar all the time on this show because I truly believe that radar is one of the best innovations that has happened to cycling since I've been on my bike, primarily because it gives you that opportunity to know that someone is coming up behind you or not. Yeah, they're not perfect, but mostly they're pretty good. And it was originally developed by a company called Garmin, who also made GPS units for all sorts of different things, not just bicycles, but also for boats and planes and all different things. That radar thing is really great. So I found if I can just figure out where I put it, and we will, right here. Here we go. Low-cost radars. So there are other radars hitting the market now. So you can maybe look for something a little bit less expensive if that's what you're looking for. You can come in a little bit less expensive than you do with the Garmin Varia. But I will say the Garmin Varia is very, very good and probably, in my opinion, next to a similar radar, which I think is made by Magine, they're both pretty good. I've had really good results. We've got one of each, and they both have USB-C charging and the integrated, a light that flashes and changes as the car gets closer, and they're very, very nice. So, there are some low-cost options that work well, though, and there is a problem with experiencing ghost cars, but I've had ghost cars when there's been a cyclist behind me. So, like I said, they're not perfect, but the false positives are out there. But it still keeps you alert, and it still makes you check your mirror if you're using a mirror on your bike, which I now strongly encourage people to do too, because the combination of the two, you're pretty much in a lot better position if someone is coming up behind you in a bad way. So you can kind of get out of the way and or, you know, whatever. Hopefully they won't hit you. But anyway, I think it just makes the road a lot safer. I think it allows me to communicate with the drivers, behind me better, because I can ride more out in my lane and feel confident with it. And then if there is a car coming, I can move over a little in my lane, which indicates the fact that I know that they're there. So I like them all. So they all will give you a false negative or false positive occasionally. But again, it is always best to look into a rearview mirror or look over your shoulder if you have the ability to do that. I do not have that ability any longer due to the titanium bridge in the back of my neck. But anyway, so the mirror has become also an integral part of this recovery process. Now, I had mirrors before this, but I have learned that they are very, very reliable and they really work well as far as that goes. So, can the other units improve? Are they going to be that much less expensive? Not so much there, but still, again, this is an integral piece of equipment that is well worth the money spent if you're going to do this. I really think that this is a great way to go. So I would say that be careful, buyer beware, if you're out looking for the radar units, flashing light units for the back of your bike. Please do be careful there, but there are a couple of tried and trues that work really, really good. And if you've had different results from this sort of thing, definitely let me know. I would love to hear from you. You can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com and I will respond back to you. So, but I'd love to hear what your feeling is about radar and how it's worked for you. You can also leave comments here on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page and right down below this video if you would like to. So the answer is that there's going to be more and more improvements as we go along, and I'm sure that it won't be very long before Garmin starts adding some more features or develops another light that is, you know, maybe got some different stuff going on. But we'll see what happens. But again, the Garmin one is tried and true. The machine is another one that I have, and it is also tried and true. I can tell you it works really well. And then there's a third one here, the Brighton Guardia, which is also a really, really nice unit. And it's it has really good reviews from this particular article out of Bicycling Magazine. So, yeah, this is kind of an interesting thing. We've got more radars entering the market, and that's a good thing. So you've got a little bit more choice out there. It used to be that it was just Garmin and that was it. So that, but it used to be that way with their GPS units too. And then everybody else got into the GPS world. So anyway, let's see if we can find this guy right here. Yeah, let me just talk a little bit more about this bike fit thing. I definitely had a piece in here I wanted to share with you guys today. And in the meantime, just so you know, there it is. No, that's where we're right there. So in the meantime, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this new book that's out, and it's called Cars Ruin Everything, and that's why we need life after cars. So keep in mind that when the first cars rolled off production lines, they were technological marvel predicted to make life easier and better for everyone. Yet 100 years later, that dream is running on empty. Instead of unbounded freedom, the never-ending proliferation of automobiles, I'm having a hard time with my tongue today, has delivered a host of costs, among them the demolition of our neighborhoods, towns, and cities to make way for car infrastructure, an epidemic on violent death, countless hours in traffic, isolation from our fellow human beings, and the ongoing destruction of a natural world. That's why we need life without, you know, after cars. Through historical records, revealing interviews, and unflinching statistics, Sarah Goodyear and Doug Gordon host a podcast called The War on Cars. I've spoken of it often on this show in the past. And former host Aaron Naparstek unpacked the scale of damage that cars cause, the forces that have created our current crisis and are invested in perpetuating it, and the way that that fight for better transportation is deeply linked to a fight for a more equitable and just society. So anyway, this book expands on the podcast with new interviews and original content, offering something for everyone, from longtime listeners familiar with the harms of car culture. By the way, YouTube, if you're looking for this. The harms of car culture and those beginning to imagine a world where fewer metal boxes are zooming around. Cars, as we know them today, are unsustainable, but there is hope. Life after cars will reach readers with tools they need to implement real transformative change, from simply raising the awareness to taking a stand at public forums. And the last piece here, it says it's past time to radically rethink and shrink society's collective relationship with the automobile. I know everybody loves their car. I know this is the United States. It's very car-centric here. But, you know, it's like I say at the end of this podcast every week, park the car one day, just one day, and use your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. So anyway, something you might want to check out, you can Google it and you'll find out more information about it. I'll put a link in here too. If you'd like to check out this new book, I'll put a link on the Facebook page so you can check it out and see what you think. Life after cars. Yeah. Life is better after cars. So anyway, let's move on from that guy right there. And then we're going to go to, where was this other little wonderful thing that's going on here? We're going to move on to a few more items. And not that one, though. We're not interested in that. So let's go back here to... Let's go back to the bridge just for a second. I just got to talk about the bridge. So the rant today was about the bridge. Yeah, it's the Gordie Howe Bridge. And the Gordie Howe Bridge was a bridge that was financed entirely, by the looks of things, by the Canadian government. And it brought Americans jobs and it brought Canadians jobs. And it was this brand new bridge to connect two major cities from between Canada and the United States. And it's beautiful, and it looks like kind of your classic suspension, newer style suspension bridge, like the there's a bridge in Boston with these cables that stick out from a long, long ways away. Oh, shout out to Boston, by the way. We got this huge storm that just came through this past weekend. Oh my God. Now, we ended up with only about a foot of snow on this one, on top of the 18 inches that we had before. So we're kind of not riding our bikes on the roads too much right now, but that's okay. You know, I mean, unless we're really, really feeling brave to get out there and ride on the narrowed streets, I'm not big on it. But anyway, Boston got slammed with about 24 inches out of that storm. Providence, Rhode Island hit a record-breaking 33 inches. 33 inches of snow. Do you know how much snow that is? You don't want to know how much snow that is. It's a lot of snow. It's a lot of snow to move. It's a lot of snow to shovel. Fortunately, I have the luxury of owning a snowblower, which makes the work a lot less. It still works because I still have to clear 200 feet of driveway. But anyway, So I segued over to this because of the bridge in Boston, which has a similar cables. Also, the new Tappan Zee Bridge, or the, they now call it the Mario Cuomo Bridge. I call it the Tappan Zee Cuomo Bridge. Anyway, that's in New York, and it goes over the Hudson River north of New York City. But these are really kind of cool-looking engineering feats, and they're really neat looking from the distance. But anyway, so there's a connection between Detroit in the United States and Windsor in Canada. And there's a bike path that is going to be on this bridge, or is on this bridge. It hasn't been opened yet. That's all. That's all we're waiting for. So in a February social media post, Trump said he would not allow the Gordie Howe International Bridge to open until the United States is fully compensated for everything they have given them. We didn't give them anything. All right, let's get our news straight here, folks. We didn't give them anything. You know what we gave them? We gave them American labor, and I believe we gave them some American steel. I believe that there's a lot more to it than what is being broadcast right now. So, and also importantly, that Canada treats the United States with fairness and respect that we deserve. Unbelievable. You know who some of my favorite people are in this world? The Canadians. They're great. I love the Canadians. I worked for the Canadians for 7 years. They're wonderful. Great people, really good to their people, they're really good for their workers, very, very pro-cycling oriented, very pro-cross-country skiing, winter sport oriented, just really, I would say, very physical activity oriented people, just real, real nice folks. I don't have a bad thing to say about the Canadians. I think they're wonderful. But, of course, they're shaking their fist right now because they don't like being pushed around by the United States right now. So, therefore, there's a little bit of scuttlebutt going on. So, this spans the Detroit River, and it was named for Canadian ice hockey legend who played for the Detroit Red Wings, Gordie Howe, and was designed to facilitate a more direct path for car and truck traffic between freeways on either side of the border, and it would have also included a bike and pedestrian path protected from 6 lanes of car traffic beside it. Yay, bike lanes. Yay, yay, yay. We love this. First conceived in the early 2000s, the bridge was built and financed by Canada under an agreement in which Canada would recoup its cost by way of tolls, though cyclists and walkers could cross for free. Thank you. See, you gotta love the Canadians. They get it. After 25 years of planning and approvals that have finally brought this massive infrastructure project close to a completion, the future of the bridge is now in limbo, and with it, the only car-free connection between the two cities, for which local advocates and trail organizations have fought for years. The number one thing is that people wanted was a bike lane, and it hadn't even been in the plan, said Lori Newton, a Windsor bike shop owner and cycling advocate who was actively involved in the Gordie Howe project. It's something that grabbed the imagination of people on both sides, whether or not they would use it. For a decade, the coalition has championed the Gordie Howe bike path and laid groundwork to connect the bridge to a network of urban bike paths and trail greenways on either side of the border, creating a powerful catalyst for cross-border tourism, cultural exchange, and connection to the region's environmental assets. Other routes across the Detroit-Windsor border have been closed to bike and pedestrian traffic since the 1980s, and there is no public transport to speak of between the two communities. The single tunnel bus that transferred passengers across the border for close up to 100 years was shut down in August. So, you know, there's been some escalation between Canada and the United States, and, you know, somebody's not getting his way, and so he's starting to complain, and now he says that he doesn't want to have anything to do with the bridge unless we're paid back for something that we didn't pay for, and I don't know where this stuff comes from. 3 o'clock in the morning, that's where it comes from. That seems to be the pattern. But anyway, I think that we will certainly see this dispute settled out. We've had some disputes here in Connecticut with some renewable energy projects, too, that have been worked out, too. So it's, you know, it's just going to take some time for people to settle down and not be so upset and juvenile about the whole thing. So, remember, the United States is a country that's really in its adolescence, and we are unfortunately being run by someone who is still in adolescence. That's it. I'm not going to say anything more because I'm going to get myself in a lot of trouble here, and I don't want to go there. I just want to ride my bike, and I want everybody to ride their bike and get along with one another and be happy, and that, to me, may seem like a very myopic view of the world, but it is not at all. We just need to work on this thing and work forward. So anyway, I can't wait until this thing opens. It'd be really cool. Maybe it's time for a road trip. Go check out the big bridge. That'd be cool. When they opened the big bridge, it's not that big a bridge. We have a bridge in Glastonbury that eventually opened a bike path and walking path on it. And it was promised for years and years and years. We had a new DOT guy in years ago that came up from New Jersey. And he actually was a guest speaker at the at Bike Walk Connecticut's annual meeting. And that was one thing he said, is that we're gonna open that sidewalk up on that bridge and that bike path up on that bridge. And everybody was cheering. And then it took a long time to get it all together, but at the grand opening, your old pal Bicycle Peddling Ron was there, and I got to cross the bridge with a number of other people for the first time, which is really cool. So anyway, anytime that a bridge is designed to accommodate bicycles as well as cars, or any roadway is designed to accommodate bicycles as well as cars, that's a really, really good thing. We like that. So anyway, we're hoping this kind of blows away and goes away, and hopefully it probably will. And I don't think that there's anything that the United States needs to do to to support this in any way. But anyway, we'll just have to see. We'll have to see what it comes down to. So let's see. What's this? We are not using that today. Okay, we're going to go to this one. So I was trying to get to this a little bit earlier and I missed out on it. But 10 surprising times you might need a bike fit. So why am I talking about bike fits all of a sudden? Well, I'm talking about bike fits all of a sudden because I now have this new restructured body and I am working very hard to get my body to adjust to the restructuring of the life-saving surgery on my neck, by the way. This was not something that I did just for fun and giggles and for the fact that I wanted to walk around and say, hey, I got titanium in my neck. I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because I was losing all my power and I was losing all my strength on my bike, not to mention in everyday life too. Even climbing stairs was becoming a major, major problem. Little did I know that I had my neck was basically collapsing upon itself and I had bone spurs that were pushing up against the nerve, and it sounds horribly painful, I know, but it really wasn't. That's the weird thing. It just started affecting my everyday activity. And one of those everyday activities, of course, is riding my bike. And one of the most noticeable places where it was happening was, guess what? Climbing hills, where you need all your power, where you need all your strength. And I was gradually getting weaker and weaker and weaker. When I was riding on the spin bike, I was putting out less power and less wattage. And, you know, I can see the numbers right in front of me. I can see what I'm doing. I can see where it's all going. And it was just, it was a problem. So it needed to get resolved. And of course, if I didn't resolve it, I would be still using wheels, but it would be in the form of a chair. So I decided that this was a good decision to go with. But I will tell you the recovery process on this. If there's anyone out there, and I know there is because I've had a few people that have contacted me after hearing about this, this is not for amateurs. This is a professional endeavor. This is really probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. And you're looking at a guy also that has had open heart surgery. And that was a walk in the park compared to this neck surgery. But end of story, they told me it would be a year to a year and a half before I would be back to 100%. And I am 7 months in, almost 8 months in on this thing now. So we're getting there. And I'm starting to finally see some changes and improvements. So but it's all up to me to make it happen. And it's a lot of doing a lot of yoga. I'm doing a lot of stretching. I'm doing a lot of emphasis on different muscles in my back to help be able to do it. So what happens when you do that? Well, your old bike fit doesn't work anymore. There you go. There's one of the 10 on the list here. So first thing on here is change in strength and or mobility. Yeah, so maybe there's part of a problem. That's an indicator. Maybe it's my bike fit. You know, maybe what's going on here is I need to get another look-see and see what's going on here in my position on the bike. And you maybe doing a new lifting regime at the gym, regimen at the gym, or a weekly yoga class you finally committed to. And, you know, your flexibility and mobility can change when you start doing things like that. All really positive things, really good for your body, but you might have to change your bike fit because of it. And because you might feel a decrease in your strength or mobility because of what you've been doing. Now, I got it through surgical means, but anyway, this is something that you always want to kind of take a look at. And I am so sick and tired of people saying, well, Ron, you know, you aren't getting any younger. And you're right, I am not getting any younger, but I am very determined to stay as fit as I can for as long as I can. And, you know, I'm not willing to accept the answer being, well, you know, maybe you should just slow down, or maybe you should just stop riding your bike so much, or maybe you should get yourself an e-bike. That is on schedule, by the way. I will be getting an e-bike. I'm definitely going to go in that direction, but I want my legs back. I want my body back, and I want to be able to sit on a bike and go out and ride for anywhere from 25 to 35 miles without any pain or discomfort. And so that's a beginning goal. End goal? Yeah, I want to be able to ride a good old metric century again. And I'm not, I think my 100-mile days are over, because that's just a long time to be sitting on a bike seat. But 100 kilometers, I can certainly see that is within reach. Plus, I also work for a couple of different events that require me to be on a bicycle, and I'd like to be fit enough to be able to continue to do those things. So I'm not done yet. So anyway, let's look also at some of the other things here that can happen. So maybe your saddle height has changed. Maybe it's changed because of a change in your body in some way. Maybe you're less flexible than you used to be because you're not doing those yoga classes, and therefore you've had to lower your seat a little bit because of that. But the whole point here is you need to take a look at it. Maybe you're dealing with an injury. Maybe it was an old injury, something you did to yourself when you were 20 years old and skiing downhill and your binding didn't release on your ski. That would be me. And, you know, you may have a problem there. And maybe you started going to a physical therapist and they look at you and they go, my God, your hip flexors and your hamstrings are a mess. And you started working on that and all of a sudden you got them back and now you're feeling like you're not right on the bike for some reason. Maybe you need a new bike fit. There you go. Maybe your lower back is bothering you and you're having problems with that. It's, once again, we're going to go right back to the bike fit and we're going to take a look at what you might do. Maybe you had another injury of some sort, a herniated disc or a back injury or something like that. Maybe you finally have finished up with your injury recovery. You've gone through all the PT and the massage and the, you know, acupuncture and the chiropractic work and all of that. And it's time for you to, you know, you want to get back on the bike, but you just not feeling like you used to. Get a bike fit. Here we go. How about postpartum? Your pelvis changes after you give birth, which means that the saddle that felt great before may be a little off, right? Yeah, everybody complains about their saddle. I don't know why. I've found saddles that I just absolutely am in love with, and I refuse to ride on anything else. But that's because I probably haven't ridden on anything else in a long time. Once you find the one that works, you stick with it. That's the way I look at it. But anyway, so postpartum, a lot changes. In general, it's hard to maintain the same posture you were able to before you had a baby. And because cycling tends to be something that women can get back to relatively quickly postpartum, it's even more important to make those fit adjustments. How about a major change in weight? Maybe you've gained or lost a significant amount of weight and your bike may need a change. Your weight, the way you carry it, can dictate the angles that you're able to hold on your bike. And if you gain weight in your midsection, you may need to increase the upright position so that you don't feel like your belly is hitting down there on the top of the top tube as much. If you lose weight in your midsection, you may be able to bend over the bars a bit lower and move even more aggressively into a more aerodynamic position. And don't be surprised, even if things seemingly shouldn't change with weight loss or gain, suddenly you start to feel different. There's a significant loss or weight gain. Your current saddle may also need to be swapped for something that feels more comfortable. A cutout saddle might have felt good in a certain weight, but after losing 20 pounds, it starts to create issues with chafing. So, feeling stuck. You feel like you plateaued, okay? You've been riding fairly well, and then, you know, you just can't seem to get on beyond that moment. And maybe you've, you know, talked to your friends on bike rides, and they've made some suggestions of things you could do. Maybe you've spent some time in the weight room. Maybe you hired a personal trainer, you know, maybe you're doing things that are all in a positive direction, but you just kind of plateaued out on your watts that you've been able to hold, and you're just not able to pedal as hard as you'd like to. A bike fit could also improve your efficiency. It can't magically make you more powerful, but it can unlock your ability to pedal smoother at a higher power. So I've been playing around with this in indoor cycling classes lately too, and I've been focusing on trying to get people to understand the power of cadence. Yeah, the power of cadence. Yeah, you don't get more power with cadence, but you do get more power with cadence. You definitely work yourself a lot harder than you realize when you increase your cadence, especially if you're staying in one particular gear on the bike. So I've been experimenting with it because I'm trying to work on some stuff for myself here, and I just find it's just a great, great tool. The indoor trainer, which seems to be the predominant cycle of choice right now with 2.5 feet of snow on the ground. you know, we spend a lot of time on it, so we learn a lot from it. And high interval training is definitely something that you can do. But maybe you're about to buy a new bike. Yeah, new bike, yay. Always a fun time riding and buying a new bike. And you need to make sure you buy the right size bike. Yeah, go get a bike fit. The bike fit will help you with that. I would highly encourage you to be looking at the new bike at the place that is giving you the fitting, but it's not necessarily the thing you have to do. Although supporting your local bicycle shop and bicycle fitter is always a good thing. So, and then, you know, there may be some other things here like contact points, your cranks, your pedals, your handlebars and hoods and saddle. Look, a lot of people are going to 165 millimeter crank arms right now. Time to check that bike fit. Make sure it's right, because you may be going to that shorter crank arm. You may have measured your saddle, you know, your saddle height out right, and, you know, saddle from the pedal up to the seat. And maybe you got that correct and all, but maybe it changed your bike fit a little bit. So that's another good reason to take a look at that. Maybe you bought a new pair of shoes and they feel a lot different. That's another reason. Another reason to take a look at it. And This is the sad one, okay? The sad one is you just don't want to ride. Oh, that is so sad. The last reason to get a bike fit is a big one that Zwift hears from clients. It's very important for us to listen to our bodies and furthermore, listen to our emotions. I think it's the way you are feeling, both physically and emotionally. It can tell you a lot. To me, a good indicator might be worth considering checking your position on the bike when you start to have this sense of dread or disinterest in riding. If you're not physically fatigued, yet you still have the feeling you just don't want to ride, it might be a good time to take a look at your position. Guess what? You're not 20 years old anymore, unless you're 20 years old and you're watching this podcast and listening to this radio show. And I'm on the University of Connecticut campus here, so there's probably a lot of 20-year-olds that are out there. But do you change? Your body changes. Everything changes. Your habits change. Your strength and fitness changes. Things are, you know, your body kind of, I'm trying to think of the best word, but it kind of just settles. And because of that, it can change the way you ride on your bicycle. And that's not a bad thing. It's just something that happens. And so that's the sad one, when you just don't want to ride your bike. I don't know if I could ever find a time when I just don't want to ride my bike. I always want to ride my bike. So when not to get a new fit, okay? Lastly, there's one time when you shouldn't get a new fit, when you just got a bike fit. If you recently got a professional fit, it's important not to make too many adjustments right after the fit or for a little while. It can take time to get used to a new fit. It may feel a bit awkward at first, even if it's an improvement. Unless there's real pain, wait at least a month before getting another fit. Give your body time to adjust. That's it. The bike fit story. it's a good time when there's 10 good reasons why you should look into a bike fit. And this is a great time of year for it, because this is the time of year that the bicycle shops are a little bit slower. So if they have a fitter on board, he or she is not going to be as busy. Not necessarily true. I apologize to those fitters out there that are booked out a month or more in advance. Good for you if you are. But this does tend to be a slower time of the year in the bicycle shop, and we're just about to approach that breaking point. So this is that time which I also remind people to get their bike in, have it looked over real quick, maybe have it looked over not real quick, and you know, get some real solid overhaul work done on the bike. Make sure it's ready for you for spring, so that you know your bike's happy and you're happy, and that's a good thing. And hey, if you have a couple of different bikes, then it's no big deal dropping your favorite bike off at the bike shop to have it checked out, right? I can't ride my favorite road ride right now because the roads are just bad. They're just real bad. So my cyclocross bike is going to be the old tried and true, because it likes getting dirty. So therefore, it can get out there and it can get dirty. But I'm not riding it anytime soon. We had a whopping 27 degrees Fahrenheit here today. Yeah, that's what it got up to after our big snowstorm. The bottom dropped out and it got really, really cold here. So going out and riding at 27 degrees is not my idea of a good time. So I taught a spin class this morning, and I'll teach one tomorrow morning and the next morning and the next morning. That's kind of the way it works this time of year with me. So anyway, let's see, what else do we have here? Yeah. So there is this funny little thing here that I picked up off a Streets blog a while ago, and I've been meaning to say something about it, but the opinion, it was on their opinions page, and it says, stop asking if people want to ride bikes. We shouldn't be aiming to nudge a few percentage points in public opinion. Our goal should be to make freedom of mobility so compelling that people will demand it, right? Right? If you build it, they will come, I believe is the famous line. So this is all a part of, it's all about the fact that I hear all the negatives, all the naysayers as to, well, I used to ride a bike, but, or I would ride a bike, but, and on. Well, you know, infrastructure change is making a big difference. Rail trails and bike access trails are becoming more and more apparent in a lot more big cities. And before you know it, there's going to be a much higher demand for the bicycle because of protected lanes and, you know, just really beautiful places to ride, too. There's some gorgeous, gorgeous places to ride. So this is something that you have to look at, and people do want to ride bikes. This is all true. There are so many people that want to ride bikes in major cities that the major cities are making huge adjustments. And those adjustments are proving to be a great thing, because the air quality changes, because the motorized vehicles are coming off of the road. The atmosphere is quieter. It's so nice. I can't wait for my first morning bike ride up to the community center to teach my class, because right now the songbirds, even though we're having a lot of winter right now, the songbirds are starting to come back, and I hear them in the morning. If I go out on my deck, I can hear them. Usually just going out on my deck to fill the bird feeder, because the snowbirds are everywhere, which tells me that winter's still here, by the way. My indicators are how many snowbirds are around my bird feeder. If I have a lot of snowbirds around my bird feeder, we still got some winter ahead of us. And unfortunately, folks, I counted 15 of them around the feeder this morning. So lots of little snowbirds eating my seeds and enjoying themselves. So I love to feed the birds. They're fun to watch. It's a good time. But I'm also starting to hear the songbirds. I saw bluebirds last week, which is really cool. I haven't seen those in a long time. Haven't seen any robins yet. I'm sure they're smart enough to stay away right now. But eventually we'll start seeing those birds too. And the first thing you do is you hear them. You start hearing them more in the morning. And when you ride your bike, when you get up super early in the morning before the sun comes up, while it's still dark out, as the sun starts to come up, the birds just come out in this huge chorus. It's so beautiful. Why I love to ride a bike. That's another one you can put on your list. Why I like to ride a bike. Love to listen to the birds in the morning when I'm riding in. Ah, it's great. So, we do want to ride bikes. There's in a bike-friendly California college city, a survey found that 87% were either interested in or confident in using a bicycle to get around. In a sprawly Texas city, only 54% were interested or confident in using a bike. A whopping 44% said no way they'd ride a bike. So the thing is, the percentages are greater for people that want to ride than for people who don't want to ride, except that 44% that don't want to ride a bike. But that's okay. Everybody can do whatever they want. It's just, we just want you to be, appreciative of those of us that are on the road with you, and we will share if you will share. That's the way share works. Children in Copenhagen today might think their surroundings have always been bike-friendly, but in the 70s, Copenhagen looked like any place in the United States. As short time ago as 1970, there were way, way more cars. There were streets were clogged with cars. Bike mode share downed. There was only 10% of people on bicycles. Now it's 70% of people on bicycles. So change can happen. And, you know, like this article that I found said, you know, I mean, children in Copenhagen, they don't know what it's like to not be around bicycles and bicycle transportation. It's the way their parents are getting around, it's the way they're transporting them. It's just, it's their way of life. And they have clear air and they have quiet cities. And, you know, it's just kind of a beautiful thing. So anyway, so much for that. Stop asking, because the answer is, yes, we want more. We want more. We want more. Of course we do. So, okay, next thing on my list, tariffs, because tariffs are what tariffs are. Several major bike brands, including Trek, Specialized, and Shimano, are among thousands of U.S. companies, including major corporations like Costco, Goodyear, Tire and Rubber Company, and Toyota, that are suing the U.S. government to get in line to recover tariffs paid under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which the Supreme Court ruled illegal last Friday. Yeah, that's true. It's illegal. So what does this mean? It means a lot of those companies should be getting their money back. Now, somebody said to me, oh man, maybe I should get some money back from my bike dealer if they're getting money back. It's probably not going to work quite that easily. But I will say that there were a lot of companies that made concessions and took lower profit margins when the tariffs came in, so to keep their bikes at a marketable price. So don't expect to get paid back as you are a consumer, but definitely it will ease up the tightness on the bicycle industry itself, which will be really good, because when they're strong and powerful, they can bring more bikes in and they can continue to supply people with bikes and keep bike shops open. I'm just getting sick of hearing, oh, another shop just closed. Oh, another shop just closed. It's everywhere. And when I ask people why, they say tariffs got them. So, and following that Supreme Court decision, People for Bikes is focusing on averting aluminum and steel tariffs. So there we go. We got more going on there. It's just a matter of, you know, those tariffs were just nasty and they really hurt the bicycle industry in a big way. So I'm glad to see that the Supreme Court is finally being a conscious entity and doing what they need to do. That vote was not unanimous, but it was definitely heavily in favor of making the the action illegal. So that's a good thing. So that's about all. Okay, the league. Yes, let's one last little piece. Do I have time for this? I do. League of American Bicyclists calls on industry and advocates to converge for the 2026 National Bike Summit. I've been announcing this for the last month or so on my events page of my report every week here, and the registration is now open for the League of American Bicyclists 2026 National Bike Summit, the premier gathering of cycling industry leaders and bicycling advocates, being held March 24th through the 26th, 2026 in Washington, D.C. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to be in the bike industry to go to this. It means you can simply be an advocate for cycling. You can just be who you are. You love to ride your bike and you want to get a little more information about what's going on here. You get to see some things and hear some things that are really cool. The three-day event features distinguished keynote speakers, topical breakout sessions, and our signature lobby day at Capitol Hill on Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. Lobby day connects hundreds of advocates, change makers, and business leaders with their representatives in Congress to educate lawmakers about the importance of building a bicycle-friendly America for everyone. If you are planning on going to this summit, I've never been to this summit, I'm embarrassed to say, I would like to go to the summit at some point. I just have never gotten the time to do it. I'm just too darn busy. But I would like to go sometime, because the one thing that is recommended on this is that if you are planning to go to the bike summit, make sure you contact your representatives before you go. Tell them weeks in advance, I am going to be at this summit. It is it is the 24th to the 26th of March. I will be in Washington, D.C. I would like you to hear what we have to say. And then don't forget to follow that up three or four times as you get closer and closer to the event day. It's really, really important. This is how you get loud. This is how you get action. This is how you get people to pay attention. It really, there's a change that could be made by putting more bicycles on the road that will be nothing but beneficial in this country. The Bike Summit serves as bicycling community's most important advocacy event of the year, said Bill Nesper, executive director for the League of American Bicyclists. The summit and lobby day provide a crucial forum for industry professionals, business owners, nonprofit leaders, and grassroots advocates to collectively shape federal policy affecting bicycling across America. Keynote speakers at the 2026 summit will include Amy Walter, publisher and editor-in-chief of The Cook Political Report, Doug Gordon and Sarah Goodyear, authors of Life After Cars, spoke about that earlier on this show, and the co-hosts of War on Cars podcast, and Commissioner Rodney Ellis from Precinct 1 of Harris County, Texas. At a pivotal moment and for the future in the nation's transportation system, the 2026 summit offers attendees opportunities to build relationships with elected officials. You get to meet face-to-face with the members of Congress and their staff, and you get to talk about issues that are affecting bicycling and the industry. You get to shape the 2026 transportation bill. With a transportation reauthorization bill on the congressional agenda this spring, summit attendees will be speaking up for the bicycling. At the same time, lawmakers are taking steps to solidify bill language. Lobby day will be a significant opportunity to advocate for increased funding for investments that make bicycling safer and easier for everyone. And then amplify our collective voice. So the more people we can get down there, the more we can be noticed, and the more we can get change to happen. The work that the league does is vital for the cycling industry. So working together with the bicycle industry, this is just kind of a no-brainer. So anyway, let's take a look at that and see what you think. Maybe it's something you want to, if you have some time and you can go there, it might be a really, really fun event. And hey, you might even get some spring weather when you're there. Whew. Boy, we could use some spring weather. We're starting to get a little tired of this cold weather. So anyway, a little bit about the League of American Bicyclists since 1880. Yes, 1880, before the cars. The League of American Bicyclists has been people-powered with a goal to make bicycling safer and easier as a means of transportation and recreation. Today, the League contributes to improve lives and strengthen communities through bicycling. There are more than 200,000 members, I'm one of them, and supporters strong, and with more than 1,000 state and local advocacy groups and bike clubs, as well as thousands of businesses, universities, and communities together leading the movement to create a bicycle-friendly America for everyone. It's all good stuff, folks. All real good stuff. All right, so that's the summit, which is coming up. And let's see here. I kind of briefly talked about this, so I'm going to pass on that one. The congestion pricing was just such a wonderful, wonderful change as far as the congestion in cities. Hey, there's a quick one. Do I have any time for this? Wout van Aert is back. He's recovered and ready to return to racing. Yeah, it's true. Even after he had that ankle fracture and surgery to help rebuild his ankle, basically. He's back. He was back on his bike. And like, I hate to tell you, it's like 10 days or something crazy. But the Belgian superstar will not compete in the more sprinter-friendly races right away, but is definitely going to compete in some of the other classics that are coming up this spring. So we'll keep our eyes on that. We hope that the 31-year-old Van Aert has, maybe a few more victories in his cache here. So we'll see what happens. And because we can't just keep watching Matthew Vanderpool win everything. Got that? So anyway, Vanner, who is seeking a maiden Paris-Roubaix victory, had his cyclocross season cut short during the crash, of course. But he's better and he's back and here we go. And the classic season is just around the corner. So, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, I can't wait. And, we'll see what happens here. So that's pretty much all I got for you guys today, other than some events. And obviously, we already talked about the 2026 Bicycle Leadership Conference. No, we didn't talk about that. That's in Dana Point, California, March 17th to the 20th. We did talk about the Washington, D.C., big thing going on there. And that is also coming up in March. That's a little bit later in March. You got to do some real jumping around to do that. Remember, the Giro will be taking place from Friday, May 8th to Sunday, May 31st. The Tour de France will be July 4th to July 26th, and the Ride of Silence, the annual Ride of Silence, the 24th anniversary, is Wednesday, May 20th at 7 p.m. worldwide, and we will be talking more about that. So here we are, finishing points. Give us your opinion, please. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people just ride bikes. Cycling is easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help make more people know the joy of bicycling. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and do your part. Hey, take that pedal and run challenge. Park that car or truck for a day and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She was off to work today. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below. And if you have been listening to this on an audio file or the radio show, you can also send me an email at bicycletalk1 bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!